It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
And this is the one area that we're even seeing more in just the last year, where people, I have to just say, are almost stupid as to what they'll put down there. People intend to embellish all sorts of information, their age, whether they're married or not. I mean, I've seen people bring me emails about their spouse where they say single, and they're married to this person.
Private attorney Larry Deal reveals the fascinating and unexpected implications when high technology meets the world of family law. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn which four companies can offer car title loans and why you don't want one anyway. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 105, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. Before this program made its debut in June 2008, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society asked every radio station in the Richmond area if they would be willing to air it. Only WRIR was willing to broadcast this program. Only WRIR support keeps this program on the radio. And only your support keeps WRIR on the air with news, views, and music no one else will let you hear. Please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. And now, this week's News You Can Use. As of October 1, 2010, car title lenders must be licensed and regulated by the State Corporation Commission. Interest rates vary between 180% and 264% per year. Loans must be for a minimum of 4 months and a maximum of 12 months, and may not be open-ended. If the borrower does not pay on time, all the lender can do is repossess the car and may not file a lawsuit for a money judgment. Lenders must give at least 10 days advance notice before repossession, and no interest may be charged afterwards. Lenders also must give at least 15 days advance notice before selling a car after repossession. The loan can't be for more than one half of the car's value, and the borrower must own the car free and clear. No electronic debiting of a borrower's bank account is allowed. A borrower may have only one car title loan at a time, and no such loans can be made to members of the military. Lenders must comply with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and can't refinance, roll over, or renew a car title loan. Although the new law is an improvement, these loans still are a bad idea, and borrowers still can lose their cars. Only four companies currently are licensed: Fast Auto Loans, Loan Max, Money Max Title Loans, and Loan Smart. In other news, some state Medicaid agencies are not complying with the Medicare Improvements for Patients and Providers Act of 2008. This act says states must treat Medicare Part D low-income subsidy application data they receive from the Social Security Administration as an automatic application for Medicare savings programs. The new law took effect on January 1, 2010, and requires the Social Security Administration to share with the state's Medicaid agency data about a Medicare beneficiary who has applied for the low-income subsidy. The goal is to have more low-income Medicare beneficiaries get enrolled in Medicare savings programs, under which the state Medicaid program pays for Medicare premiums and copays, and saves beneficiaries thousands of dollars. The states must treat the data as an application, treat the data as verified, and process it within 45 days. However, some states are not processing the data, others are merely sending flyers or new applications to beneficiaries, and still others aren't following the prescribed deadlines. Most beneficiaries don't know that if they are eligible for the low-income subsidy, they also may be eligible for Medicare savings programs. More information is available at www.nsclc.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for the answer to our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? Last week we gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. Which two types of discrimination are prohibited by the Fair Housing Act? A. Discrimination based on national origin. B. Discrimination based on having children in the household. Or C. Discrimination based on source of income. The correct answers are A. Discrimination based on national origin. And B. Discrimination based on having children in the household. The Fair Housing Act does not prohibit discrimination based on source of income. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Legal education is legal empowerment and an essential part of the struggle for fairness, equality, and justice. Since 2005, WRIR has made programs like the Legal Aid Radio Show possible, so you can hear what nobody else will broadcast. Whether it's unrepresented news, views, or music, WRIR is the only outlet for cultural diversity in Richmond, and you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift, or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. We're here at the offices of Barnes & Deal in Chesterfield, Virginia, and we're speaking with Larry Deal, and we'll be talking about family law and the impact of high tech. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Glad to be here, and it's a pleasure.
Now, when it comes to Virginia family law, Larry, I know you've literally written the book. You've written a book called Virginia Family Law Theory and Practice. You're the co-author with two other individuals. So will you tell us, what are some of the recent problems or trends in family law that you have seen in the last maybe 10 or 15 years?
Well, I think one of the biggest trends that we've seen in the family law practice, and that would include, when we talk about that, divorce, equitable distribution, property issues, support issues, is the impact of high tech. And when I say high tech, that can include everything from people thinking that they can tap a phone to computer problems and access to computers to the impact of Facebook and MySpace. And even more recently, people thinking that they want to track their spouse and they put GPS devices on phones. So it has a wide range of impact as technology increases. It seems to flow over into our field of law.
So let's go through some of those one at a time. What about tapping telephones or recording a telephone conversation? Is that legal? If it's legal, is it admissible?
Two different issues. The telephone, of course, has been around a while, so we've had statutes and have pretty clear law in Virginia on that. And the answer is, it is illegal, and this would be a violation of both state and federal statutes, to intercept a phone conversation between two other parties. We typically get, sometimes people come in, they've gone to the Radio Shack and bought these little tapping devices, and aha, I've got my spouse talking to the boyfriend, and look what I've got. That is illegal. It could be prosecuted. I've actually had some clients prosecuted, although counties don't want to get into domestic relations. What is not illegal is if you're a party to the conversation. If your spouse calls you and you tape it, it is not illegal, but it may not be admissible unless at the beginning of the conversation you advise them clearly that they are being recorded. Now, in other contexts, when people call in and leave a voicemail message, happens all the time, that's certainly legal, and if someone calls in and is screaming, yelling, leaving irate messages about things that might reflect on a custody issue or accusing people of adultery, those kinds of conversations are admissible because you know you're being recorded by the implication of a voicemail receipt on that.
Now let's take it up a notch in terms of technology. What about computers and emails? Can people hack into or otherwise gain access to other people's computers and emails? And again, is that legal and is it admissible as evidence?
Well, it's going to depend on what we call the expectation of privacy. Again, to reflect the, you know, development of computers, the statutes have tried to catch up on those kinds of things similar to the phone issue. And our laws are clear that if you hack in other words, if you don't know the password of a computer, and let's talk about the average family that's got a family computer, maybe the husband's paying for it, it's, you know, purchased by him, but the family uses it, it doesn't matter who actually owned it or paid for it. If the other spouse, for example, has a password, and the, let's say, husband is thinking wife is involved with someone in an improper relationship or some other conduct, and they somehow hack in to get that password, that violates, again, state and federal laws. It has implications civilly, where there's monetary damages that can be done per diem. These keystroke programs that you put on definitely would be inadmissible and illegal unless the other party had consented to it. And those are things people bring us a lot when they'll say, look at all the emails I've got through these keystroke programs. If the password is known, or if someone leaves out on the desk the password and you see it's like leaving a key to a lock, and that is not illegal. And generally, if you are foolish enough to leave your password out when you wanted that privacy and the other person gets information about communications with, like, say, the boyfriend or admissions about things of conduct that might reflect in a custody case later, that would be admissible.
And what about emails? Emails that you send, emails that you receive. Again, are those going to be admissible in a family law case?
Well, if you had to hack to get the emails, then you've got a problem. But what sometimes in our cases we are starting to do now is there are experts around that can actually program down and download hard drives. And if you get a court order, if you are at all uncertain about the issue of admissibility and we want to be prudent, we will go to the court, get an order that allows the computer to be delivered to an expert of our choosing who, unless someone is very sophisticated in wiping out things, can get a lot of those emails off. And then it would be admissible, and you just then ask the other person about the emails or get what we call admissions, where they admit they either received it or sent it to a person if it has evidence that's relevant to a case.
Now, you mentioned Facebook, and of course that's part of the explosion of social media, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, Flickr. Are those types of documents or computer-generated documents admissible in evidence in a family law case?
Again, generally they are. They certainly would be prepared by that party that you want to cross-examine them on. Generally, they're going to have identification of that person, so it's pretty easy to prove that. And this is the one area that we're even seeing more in just the last year, where people, I have to just say, are almost stupid as to what they'll put down there. People intend to embellish all sorts of information, their age, whether they're married or not. I mean, I've seen people bring me emails about their spouse where they say single, and they're married to this person, and they're trying to meet people over the internet, or they are connecting with old high school friends, embellishing their income for support case purposes, where I had a case where the guy put down $100,000 on his income on Facebook, and we knew he wasn't making that much, but these kinds of things tend to also affect credibility of a party in a case.
So I guess the lesson here again is, what we always preach to the young folks is if you put it on Facebook or on some social media, just expect that it could be used against you by anybody.
It's out there for the world to see, and lawyers that, like myself, are more and more attuned to getting that information relevant to that case. I won a case, and I'll give you an example, involving a custody where the wife wanted to relocate to Idaho. And she said the reason was, well, I want to go back to school up there. My family's up there. And it was a young child of 6 months old. My client was the father who was living in Baltimore and seeing the child every other week here in Richmond. That was okay. But if he had moved, if this mother had moved to Idaho, he would have been denied substantially the contact. Well, the MySpace that she didn't know we had were communications with her, of course, now we know, boyfriend. And she's bragging about how she can't wait to be up there. And this guy's back to her saying, oh, can't wait to see the baby. And she's holding this child as if she's going to go out there. And, you know, it was one of these Perry Mason moments where I'm saying to this lady, ma'am, is there any other reason you can think of why you're moving? Oh, no, sir. No, sir. Well, how about this? And I hand her the Facebooks that she didn't know we had in MySpace. And it was two shades of white. The case was over. I mean, it was obvious that she was moving to see the boyfriend, which would not be a legitimate reason to move and take this child away. A classic example of how these things can come back and burn you.
So going back to sort of computer use, you've indicated that just what you do on a computer can come back to haunt you. Can you just elaborate on that?
The disturbing trend I'm seeing is in two areas. One is the obsession with pornography. And people are on those things, and sometimes these things flash up when little kids are using it. That's when it relates to the custody matter, because children should not be exposed to that. Or just the time that the party, that spouse is away. It can be addictive, and it's a real problem from a mental health area. The Tiger Woods, a little different, but you know his addiction with women, maybe not to that extent, but when people are having affairs or whatever, a lot of times those are started by chats, meeting people over the internet and having communications and affairs, whether verbally, which is an affair of the heart, as remember old Jimmy Carter said once, or it's an actual meeting set up. And these things can break up marriages, and it's something that we are seeing more and more of.
And do you find other types of bad behavior happening online, like gambling and such?
That or just playing games excessively. I had one case with a husband who was just a gamer, and he would be on there for 7 or 8 hours when he came home from work. And fine that he does it, but it's taking away time from the kids and the family, and it's an addiction. So it's a problem.
So caution our listeners, what are some of the things that are criminal that they definitely ought not do to try to get the edge on their spouse or significant other in a family law case?
Sure. In summary, first, you don't want to wiretap a telephone between two other parties. Do not go out to these Radio Shack things and hook it up. It is not admissible or legal, and occasionally there are prosecutions of those. Secondly, do not hack into computer access folders or programs where you do not have the password and you have to determine that password. Don't put these keystroke programs on your computer without the consent of the other party. That can be a violation of both federal and state wiretap laws. And more recently, one of the newest uses of technology is what we call the GPS device. People will put GPS devices on automobiles to track where their spouse is going when there's suspicions of infidelity. That is a new evolving issue and problem. The law is that if you acquire an automobile during the marriage, it may be marital property. That means that it would be divided by the court in any property division later by the court. But if it is titled in only one spouse's name, so let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say the car is in the husband's name only, and the wife believes husband is having infidelity and wants to put a GPS on. That would be a violation of state law and criminal in conduct. You can put it on if it's jointly titled, as long as it's not obstructive in the operation of the car and things of that kind. So you have to watch it. I would advise anyone thinking about GPS devices as a means of investigation to consult with an attorney or an investigator who's qualified to know what you're doing. Don't do it self-help, because even though the other party's the one, well, he's the one at fault. He's doing this, he's doing that. You might be the one that's got the criminal issue on the other side. The evidence might be all thrown out We call that the fruit of the poisonous tree. It means if you got evidence through an illegal means, it may not even be admissible. So the lesson is get good advice as to what you're doing whenever you use any of these higher technological methods.
Well, this has been most informative. We have been speaking with Larry Deal. He is an attorney with the firm of Barnes & Deal in Chesterfield, Virginia, and we have been talking about family law and the impact of high technology. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Remember when radio used to be real people spinning real records? Remember when news and talk programs used to be insightful and relevant? We at WRIR do too. WRIR DJs hand-select the music they play each week. WRIR also features locally produced news and talk covering local, national, and international stories. We are Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. And you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift. Or donate online at www.wrir.org. Thank you.
It's time for our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of the Virginia State Bar's Handbook on your legal rights and responsibility. Here's this week's question. In which two public benefit programs is there a limit on countable resources for an applicant to be eligible? A, food stamps. B, temporary assistance for needy families, or C, supplemental security income. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link. Then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This radio station, WRIR, provides programming you can't get anywhere else. If you can't afford to contribute, listen for free. If you can afford to contribute in any amount, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. When you buy something, you expect to be treated fairly, but what if you're not? Join us next week when consumer attorney Patty Anderson explains what consumer fraud is and what to do about it. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.